Good afternoon on this fine October Sunday. This is the Wave Project. This is also a fall pledge drive for KFAI, an opportunity for you, the listeners, to provide your support to the station by making a monetary donation. And you can do that by calling 612-375-9030. My name is Bob. I'm one of the many station volunteers here at KFAI. With me today are some other wonderful station volunteers as well. We have Ryan and Mike. And can one of you guys tell me what that number is again?
That number is 612-375-9030.
Okay, and they can also pledge online at
www.kfai.org.
Wonderful. We have a very special guest today. Her name is Jennifer Fierke. Jennifer, the mic is yours.
Okay. Hey, everybody. It's Co-op Month. My name is Jen Fierke from North Country Cooperative Development Fund. And today we're going to be talking to Eric Essie of North Country Co-op Grocery, which has been operating on the West Bank of Minneapolis since 1971. And we'll also be talking to Bert Jones, who is Secretary of the Board of Directors of the Paul Revere Manufactured Home Park Co-op in Lexington, Minnesota, and he's also the head of the marketing committee and has designed the Paul Revere website at www.prcoop.org. A little bit about North Country. North Country Cooperative Development Fund, not North Country Cooperative Grocery, is a family of organizations whose purpose is to build and strengthen cooperative enterprise through financing, development, and organizational support. Businesses and individuals can participate in building and strengthening co-ops by investing in, borrowing from, or donating to NCDF. If you want more information, you can call us at 612-331-9103 or visit www.ncdf.coop. So first off, we're going to start out talking to Eric Essie from North Country Co-op Grocery.
Exactly.
Do you want to talk a little bit about your association with North Country?
Yeah, I am the marketing coordinator at North Country and also have been on the board of directors in the past. And before that, started out as a volunteer there.
Great. I was wondering, for listeners that might not be aware of the concept, if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what a co-op like North Country is and what its importance is to the community.
Sure. North Country is a consumer cooperative. That means that the people, it's an association of people come together to provide food for themselves. And really it came out of the 1960s when people came together because of the peace movement and also because of their dissatisfaction with the food they were getting. This is back in the days when there was no such thing as organically labeled food. There was mom and pop grocery stores are going under, and people wanted an alternative to big grocery stores and very processed food. So they came together to create their own grocery store, and that's what it is. It's owned by the members, and the members elect the board of directors, and that sets what kind of food gets sold there. So it's really a way for the community to not only determine what food they get and what food is provided to them, but also to keep all the profit from that venture in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that at North Country there's a lot of Ethiopian and Somali food products, and mm-hmm. Yeah, just like in the community.
Exactly, and yeah. Really, because so many food co-ops are founded to provide natural foods to people, and when there was no such thing in their neighborhood, that's what most people associate with food mm-hmm. co-ops. But really, it can be anything that the members decide it is. There are non-natural foods-oriented co-ops, and we're in a unique co-op in that we are on the West Bank neighborhood, so we have a variety of more traditional natural foods, I guess you would say, and we also have a lot of food that's suited to people in the neighborhood, especially Somali and Ethiopian people.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been involved with the grocery, with the co-op?
I think I started volunteering there about 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and been went on the board about 4 years ago and joined the staff 2 years ago.
So have cooperatives changed since you've been involved?
Well, it's not
much,
that long
it hasn't
of a
been
time,
that long.
But there actually have been some interesting developments in the last few years around certain elements of cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
One is that I think there's now a growing awareness of a system in Spain called the Mondragon system in northern Spain, where there is a association of over 200 cooperatives and that are in all areas, including industry and banking and education, that have united into one big system that has something like 50,000-60,000 employees, and it's all worker-owned. And more and more people are aware of that, and that's bringing up the idea of cooperatives more and more. Another thing that's interesting and I got to be involved in was amongst the worker cooperatives. We should explain there's like basically three different kinds of cooperatives. Some that are owned by the shoppers, the consumers. Some that are owned by the workers. And some that are a producer co-ops, like a bunch of farmers get together to start a co-op, or a bunch of craftspeople do. And amongst the worker co-ops, which is the smallest sector, just in the last few years, there's a national organization formed. And actually, it was formed in 2004 at the first National Worker Co-op Conference, which took place right across the street here at the Humphrey Institute, I should say. Mm-hmm. And I had the privilege of being the staff organizer for that. And that was a very inspiring thing to have a first organization of worker cooperatives. And that's, they just had their second conference in New York City just a few weeks ago. So those things are really great and are forwarding the movement. Another thing I should mention is that the new government in Venezuela has changed things a lot because they're a very pro-cooperative government. And I just read that 70,000 new co-ops were started in Venezuela in the last few years.
70,000?
70,000. Wow. And actually Citgo, the gas station company that's owned by the Venezuelan government, donated money towards the U.S. Worker Cooperative Conference. So there's international solidarity there.
Wow. That's excellent. Well, in the interest of self-help and self-sufficiency, why don't we play a little bit of James Brown? This is "I Don't Want Nobody to Give Me Nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself."
Little James Brown there. You are tuned in to KFAI's Wave Project, an hour each and every Sunday dedicated to community access to the local airwaves. Okay, we're going to turn the mic and the show back over to Jennifer.
Hi, this is Jen again from North Country Cooperative Development Fund, a family of organizations who build and strengthen cooperatives. And we are talking to Eric Essie of North Country Cooperative Grocery, and he's telling us a little bit about the history of co-ops, previously globally, but now we're going to talk a little bit about co-ops in the U.S., right?
Yeah. And it's interesting because before we even get into the U.S. history, we should mention about Minnesota being pretty much the most cooperative state in the country. We have the most food cooperatives of any place. We have some major cooperatives like Health Partners. The HMO is actually a cooperative. Cenex gas stations, that's a cooperative. Land O'Lakes is a huge agriculture cooperative. So this is ground zero for cooperatives in the U.S. But as for the history of cooperatives in the United States, there's really been three waves, and maybe we're in the fourth now. One is in the late 1800s with the populist movement and a lot of activism in the countryside, in the plains states, in the south, farmers coming together to form cooperatives. Then in the 20s and 30s, there was another wave of more socialist-oriented cooperatives, and that was big in Minnesota because of the huge Finnish immigrant population in the 20s. A lot of them came over because they were on the losing side of a civil war in Finland, and the socialists lost and came to Minnesota and started food co-ops and other things of that nature. Then in the 60s, of course, there was a big counterculture movement and political upheaval, and that led to the 1970s, a lot of food cooperatives and some other forms of cooperatives being formed. And now there's interest growing again, and we see here just in the Twin Cities area, a couple new food cooperatives have been started, one east side in northeast Minneapolis, and another down in Northfield called Just Foods.
Sure.
And we're hoping that it's another boom in cooperatives in the U.S.
So North Country Cooperative Grocery started in 1971. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk a little bit about the genesis of that?
Yeah. We're the oldest co-op in the Twin Cities. There was one food cooperative previous to us that was started by a black nationalist group on the north side, but they ran afoul somehow of the law enforcement, which happened a lot with those type of groups because of their radical stance and the police's stance of the police against that. So we are the oldest surviving one. In right around 1970, some sisters started to sell bulk food off their back porch, mm-hmm. and this is a way of sharing bulk food for people. And that eventually moved to a waiting room of a health clinic, and then actually started the store. And in that store met its goals for sales for the whole year in its first month. There was just a hunger and a need for this type of food. And there's a legend passed down that the lines got so long that one of the cashiers stood up and said, if the line's too long, go start your own co-op. Mm-hmm. And in the next 5 years, there were almost 25 new food co-ops in the Twin Cities.
Great.
And then those that went on to the early 80s. There was a recession. There was a lot of reorganization. Number of co-ops dropped. But the ones that survived, there's 12 currently or 13 with 16 locations in the Twin Cities. If they survived to the 90s, they got big because mm-hmm. in the 90s, of course, organics became huge. And now we have mm-hmm. places like the Wedge Co-op in Uptown, which is by sales the biggest food co-op in the U.S.,
Wow. Yeah, North Country Cooperative Development Fund actually started in 1978. And mm-hmm. the legend of the North Country Cooperative Development Fund is that all of the food co-ops couldn't get the bank to lend them any money because they were a totally new kind of democratic organization. And so they just pooled their money together into a fund and lent it to themselves and then paid it back and lent it to somebody else. And then and CDF grew and grew from there. So it's all very grassroots.
Mm-hmm. And one of the basic cooperative principles, of course, is cooperation amongst cooperatives.
Right.
And that's what NCDF is, and we're really lucky to have it here.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Well, why don't we play a little more music? This is The Raincoats, No Side to Fall In. Okay, this is Jen Fierke from North Country Cooperative Development Fund, and we are talking to Eric Essie of North Country Cooperative Grocery, which is a completely separate organization. it's been operating on the West Bank of Minneapolis since 1971, and Eric is going to talk a little bit about cooperatives and fair trade.
Yeah, fair trade, for those of people who aren't familiar with it, is a system of trade usually dealing with imported goods where a higher price is paid by the consumer and that price is passed on to the farmers so that farmers, often coffee farmers or chocolate farmers in the developing world, are able to stay on their land and have a cohesive community instead of being driven off their land and experiencing near slavery conditions. And that system was created in large part by cooperatives and is really a system that is based on the idea of cooperation. In the case of coffee farmers, for instance, all the coffee farmers involved in fair trade are organized in cooperatives themselves. And then the food co-ops in the U.S. have been the primary place where those products have first been sold. Of course, you can get it at some places that are corporations as well. But it's really been food co-ops and farmer co-ops in Mexico and Guatemala, Ethiopia, that have pushed this system forward. And I have the luck, too, to be involved in a new segment of that. The people here who have seen the success of this fair trade system for people in the developing world thought, well, we have farmers here who are having problems, farm workers as well. We need a fair trade system for here in the U.S. And so right now I'm involved in a group called the Local Fair Trade Network that is developing a fair trade system for local product. And it's part of a national or international movement towards domestic fair trade as well, to help the consumer realize that the price they pay has an impact on rural communities and to create a system by which they can help rural communities stay cohesive and by buying local or domestic fair trade products. And that's a really exciting thing that cooperatives are advancing as well.
Great. So if somebody wanted to learn more, mm-hmm. where could they go?
Well, let me think. Yes, if you go to the North Country Cooperative website, which is northcountrycoop.com, co-op with no dash, just coop, You can get a list of resources, websites, and books about the history of cooperatives and what cooperatives are doing right now. So that's www.northcountrycoop.com.
Great. And we're going to play one more song here. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Bert Jones, Secretary of the Board of Directors of the Paul Revere Manufactured Home Park Cooperative. And this is Betty Serviert, Tomboy.
And you are listening to KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and 106.7 FM in St. Paul, Radio Without Boundaries. We here at the station appreciate it greatly. KFAI has more than 3,500 listener members. Mike, can you tell us why listener members are so vital to the success of KFAI?
Well, you know, Bob, KFAI is truly the voice of the community. One of the reasons that KFAI exists and has been so successful is because this station actually is a voice for people who are not normally represented by mainstream media. This program, which I'm one of the engineering folks on this program, is such a blast for me to work with because this is true grassroots radio. This is where people have the opportunity to speak to the community, present their ideas, their interests, and tell their stories. And that is community radio at its best. That's why this station is so vital, and that's why our mission to continue to present these kinds of programs is so important. So we need your pledge.
I know that Jennifer is anxiously waiting to continue her show, so we're going to turn it back over to Jennifer.
Thanks. This is Jennifer Fierke from North Country Cooperative Development Fund, and we are now talking to Bert Jones, Secretary of the Board of Directors of the Paul Revere Manufactured Home Park Co-op in Lexington, Minnesota. He's also the head of the marketing committee. Hi.
Hi.
Bert, how are you?
I'm good.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what a manufactured home park co-op is, okay, and why they're important.
Well, the manufactured home park cooperative is basically where the residents come together and they purchase their park, their homes. And it's a very cool thing to be in, for one. Members have more of a security in a manufactured home park, mm-hmm, so that they don't have to worry about the land being sold out from underneath them to a developer. They also have more membership rights. So they can say, you know, we want this rules, or no, this rule's not working for us. They also have more of a say in rent increases, how much, how often, where that money goes, what kind of improvements they get.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in more of a privately owned park, you really don't have a say in the rents. You don't have a say in the rules. It's kind of, here's what it's going to be, and you got to live with that, or you move out. Also, if your home, if the land is sold underneath your, from underneath you, unless your city has a park closing ordinance, you don't get reimbursed for that. You don't,
sure,
get any money to relocate your home or find a new home. You're pretty much just stuck. And that's really not up to the park owner to get something like that in place. It's really up to your city officials. So it's a really good thing for owners, because now they become a real owner. It's not just a home that they own on land they don't. Mm-hmm. They own the home and a share of the land. And it's just more, they have such security and not have to worry about that. It's one less worry in your life.
Okay, so basically when somebody else owns the park, the residents own the home, but the landlord, mm-hmm, quote unquote, owns the land,
yep,
under the park. So when you have a co-op, everybody's just buying the land so that they don't have to move.
Exactly.
Ever. Right. And how did the Paul Revere Co-op get started?
One of our residents became involved with a organization called All Parks Alliance for Change.
Mm-hmm.
And through that organization, she'd heard about manufactured home parks becoming cooperatives. And she was like, wow, this is something perfect for our community. She was tired of the whole unfair rules that were being put in place and some of the way the residents were being treated. And she's like, this is something perfect for us. So she worked together with a bunch of other residents, and they created a resident association. And through that association, they first started with getting a park closing ordinance in place in our city, so that one, that they didn't have to worry about if their park was sold, that they're getting some sort of reimbursement. And then also they worked on getting some of the rules reversed from the private owner that really shouldn't have been in place at all. And then also they helped a couple of our residents really stand up to the management at the time and say, you know, this isn't, yeah, I have rights and these are my rights. And then through, with the help of NCDF, they were able to secure financing and purchase the park.
Great. Yeah. And this is a problem. Parks closing all over the state, or the threat of park closure. And it's really it's a giant source of affordable housing that could go away if we don't find a solution to it. And we think, at least, and I'm sure you guys think,
yes.
that cooperatives are a really good solution to that problem.
They are.
So, and how is life sort of before the co-op and after the co-op?
The day-to-day life hasn't really changed.
Sure.
It's still the same. Other than I've noticed that residents seem to take more pride in their home sites and the community in general. I'm seeing more residents come out and help their neighbors with certain things. Planting the summer, we had a lot of people come out and just plant flowers, which before that activity really wasn't there. It was like, it's not my land. Why do I care? And then we've also noticed, you know, people socializing more. Like before I became involved with cooperative, I didn't care if I knew my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And even in parks that I've lived in before, I didn't care if I knew my neighbors. I have my family, you know, we're a private family. That's it. That's good for us. But once I got to know people and things seemed to click and we started talking more and I got to meet more people that were like me. And I was like, hey, we've got the same interests. And now we go to each other's birthday parties and celebrations and our kids play together. And it just seems like there's more of a sense of community and it's not just I'm a neighbor in a trailer park.
Right.
And actually that whole word trailer is being like just taken out of our park.
Exactly.
You mentioned the word trailer and you've got about 30 people that yell at you because you said the T word. that sense, they take more pride. And our
sure.
park, I have seen the reputation improve too, because our park didn't have the greatest reputation. And since we've become a co-op, you go around the community now and you say you're from Paul Revere Co-op and they're like, you guys bought the park, didn't you? And everybody who are in even traditional homes are very excited about that. They want to know more. What's it like? You know, what has changed? And so there's the reputation's improving.
Great. Well, let's play another song. This is Gangsters. This is The Specials. And the song is Gangsters.
And you can give more power to the people by pledging right here at KFAI at 612-375-9030. This is KFAI, and you are listening to The Wave Project, a public access hour that lets you, the listener, speak out about your favorite subject or community project, or share your special brand of music with the Twin Cities community. No other station in the Twin Cities provides this type of opportunity for its listeners. Help keep KFAI strong and the Wave Project rolling by pledging your support. Give us a call at 612-375-9030, or you can pledge online at www.kfai.org. And now we're going to turn it back to Jennifer.
Thanks. This is Jennifer Fierke from North Country Cooperative Development Fund, and we are talking to Bert Jones, Secretary of Board of Directors of the Paul Revere Manufactured Home Park Cooperative. And so, Bert, your first anniversary, the Paul Revere's first anniversary just came
yep.
around, didn't it?
October.
Yeah. How did that go?
It was very fun. We had took a couple of weeks to plan it, kind of short notice actually, and we just really went all out since it was our first anniversary. We also kind of turned it into an open house to try and get more people interested in moving in, you know, finding out what a cooperative is, to moving in if they wanted to move in a home. We had a lot of special guests that came out too. We had different state representatives that came out and a couple people from APAC. And it was just, we had really a big turnout. I think it was one of the big, since I've been in the park, it's been one of the biggest events we ever had. I've never seen that many residents come and celebrate that day. It was just awesome. We had entertainment, we had food, and we had a lot of events for kids and prizes, raffle drawings. And it was just a great way to celebrate our first anniversary.
Great. And Bert, you were telling me a little bit about earlier about how these events have affected manufactured home parks or in your area. Did you want to talk about?
Well, actually, it was more just the communities. We have a national night out that we do every year. And there's a few communities around us that we all kind of share the police department. And one of our residents was telling me a couple of weeks ago that our national night out really started with our community, at Paul Revere. And because of our persistence of doing it every year, the other surrounding communities started doing their own kind of group-wide national night out. And so now some of our special guests kind of go around and stop at each one for an hour or so. But the residents really look forward to having that national night out and the different events that we persistently do every single year.
Great. I just think that's so cool.
And they're all on our website. You can see all the pictures from our events, too.
And your website is?
www.prcoop.org.
And that's co-op without a dash.
Yep.
COOP. And you're on the board. How did you get involved with the board?
Like I had said before, I didn't care if I knew my neighbors. I was fine just staying at home and living life. Because we had just purchased the park, back in 2005, we have monthly all park meetings where members or just regular renters can come and just kind of know what's going on in the park and also voice their concerns. Because sometimes it's easier to talk to just a fellow resident than it is a board of directors. Mm-hmm. So they come to these weekly or these monthly meetings, and at one of them, they were kind of turning it into like a rules and regulations workshop to kind of get the member feedback of different rules and kind of proposed rule changes, because some of them really needed to change. And I was at the time was going to build a shed, and I'm like, okay, I need to know what's going on with this. So I went, and actually that was 2 months that they had taken out and did this kind of workshop. And at the end of one of them, at the second one, they were talking more about different committees that were forming to help with different areas. And I'm a graphic designer by trade, so I went up after the meeting and talked to the interim president who was kind of running the workshop and said, you know, it'd be great if you had a communications committee. And she immediately said, great, you want to chair that? And I was kind of on the spot, and I went, sure. And about a few weeks later, she would give me different projects in those few weeks, and I guess my follow through was what she'd wanted. And the next thing I know, I'm getting an email saying, you know, our secretary had to drop out because for some personal reasons, we need a secretary. Would you like to do this? And I'm like, well, what does it involve? And oh, not much, you know. So I was like, oh, I can do that. It's, you know, a couple meetings here and there. Sure, why not? And all of a sudden, I'm the secretary. And yeah. And she really, it was, I guess I was the first secretary she had. She could really, you know, get a lot of stuff done and know that it was getting taken care of. And so she really just kind of dumped on me and I was fine with it. I really like a challenge. And, from there on, it just kind of grew. And, we actually had our elections, and board members were, I didn't want to run that first year because I was having a baby. I was like, I knew my life was going to be busy. So I'm like, nope, I'm not going to run. And then we had a member had to drop off. And so then they asked me back, you know, saying we could really use another secretary. And I'm like, well, I can handle it now. So that's kind of where I am now, as I'm back on the board.
Wow. And so I'm sure your life has drastically changed.
Yeah, it's still really busy. We've got our meetings down to one a month, but it's still a lot of work. The first year in any cooperative is really going to be a lot of work. A lot to kind of figure out how you're going to work together, policies, procedures, all that kind of stuff.
Great. Well, let's play another song. This is Slater Kinney. Oh. Hello, this is Jen Fierke from North Country Cooperative Development Fund, and we are talking to Bert Jones of the Paul Revere Manufactured Home Park Co-op. And I was just, Bert, is there anything else you want to say about your co-op?
Yep, just want to let people know that we have sites available and are looking for more residents to move homes in. Anyone that is interested in our community can contact us at 763-784-8193 or on our website at www.prcoop.org. That's PRCOOP.org.
Org. Great. And I'll just say thank you to NCDF for allowing me to come on the show today. North Country Cooperative Development Fund is a family of organizations whose purpose is to build and strengthen co-ops through financing, development, and organizational support. You can participate in building and strengthening co-ops by investing in, borrowing from, or donating to NCDF. You can call us at 612-331-9103 or visit www.ncdf.coop. Wow, that's a lot of numbers. So, thank you very much.
Okay, I'd also like to thank Mike and Ryan for helping out in studio today. Mark and company on the phones. We did capture a couple pledges during the WAY project today. Michael in from Minneapolis and Scott from St. Paul. Thanks again, and thanks, Jennifer, for telling the community all about co-ops that are available to assist in everybody's everyday life. So it's good information. So thanks for listening to the WAY Project, and stay tuned for Indian Uprising. I'm in the
fumble, the one across the KFAI is radio without...